Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. A just ridiculously gorgeous Monday afternoon at that.
I can't believe it's the tail end of October and it's 80 degrees outside or close to it.
I know. I can't either. I am 110% here for it, though. I love it. Like, if this could... I know this isn't going to carry on to Halloween necessarily, but I'm just saying if it'd be even honestly half this nice by the time we get to the 31st, I would be pretty happy with it.
You're not looking at it from the kid's standpoint. You're looking at it from a party standpoint, and that's fair. But I'm thinking of those poor kids. Last couple of years, it's been rainy. Last year was the first snowfall of the year, was on Halloween. The kids, you know... Being a kid in Halloween in Michigan sucks because you can't be anything cool. You gotta have to have a costume that incorporates a jacket.
You really do, because the weather just does not allow for anything else.
No, they don't let kids have that kind of fun. So hopefully, I mean, if this is global warming, maybe it's not too bad. So okay, we lose a few polar bears, but you know,
these are just kind of the trade offs, I suppose.
Yep.
Couldn't ask for a better weekend, though.
Like,
we
no.
actually, the wife and I ventured out to the lovely town of Port Sanilac and had a little bit of fun out at the at our favorite bar out that way, the Alley Bar. Music going on outside.
Cool.
You know, it's rare when you can actually enjoy an outdoor venue like in mid-late October in this state.
Yeah.
So we took full advantage of that. And then I took my 27-year-old wife trick-or-treating. Because this is...
That's your life.
When you're married to the Queen of Halloween, these are things that happen.
I could just imagine her, like, taking small little steps up to the door and you having to coax her. Come on, say trick or treat. You want candy? You're going to have to say trick or treat. Say thank you.
No, so we went to this this haunted trail thing over at the... Port Sanilac's got kind of like... almost like a mini Greenfield Village kind of thing.
Cool.
And they set up their stuff. I didn't realize, like, they said it was they had a kind of super spooky trailer or whatever, but I didn't realize it's basically, kids going and handing out, they're handing out candy for the kids, and they offered Rachel a bag, so she wasn't going to not take it.
She's half in the bag after the Alibi Bar or wherever you're at. She's like, I want candy, let's go. Sean, you're slowing me down.
A really cool little thing they put on, though. Like they did have some nice little haunts, and apparently a creepy baby doll judging contest. Like it was that's a thing. It was good times were had all the way around. It definitely restored her childlike wonder of Halloween or whatever.
No. Like the, really, restored it. Your house looks condemned. It looks like zombies are gonna be busting through your window at any moment.
Well,
She did a great job. Me, you know how Friday I was just bragging about having a fire in the backyard. Couldn't wait for it. Couldn't wait.
You didn't do it, did you?
No, I tried. I went to the little store near us, got a bundle of wood, and I don't know what this wood is, but they need to make houses out of it. I could not get that to light for nothing. I used half a jug of lighter fluid. I could not get this stuff to light.
Wow.
Yeah. Finally, I'm like half in the bag. I'm like, screw it.
I don't have a can of gasoline around here somewhere. It'll be fine.
I don't know. Lighter fluid, that stuff. I mean, it's right in the title, lighter fluid.
Right.
It catched things on fire juice or whatever.
Apparently was not doing its job Friday.
I was waiting to just shut my back door going into the house and just... No, but it didn't happen. I could not get it to light for nothing.
Way to go, Adam.
Yeah, I failed at life that day, but fall's not over. I will have a fire in the backyard.
Yeah, we didn't end up... We were talking about lighting up our fire table Friday. That did not happen either.
No.
Like, Rachel went out there, like, it's kind of, it cooled off a whole lot. I'm going to go inside and read a book.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it cools off. But that's why you have a fire. It makes sense.
I get that part, but it was just a little too much for her. I'm like, I don't blame you.
Yeah, gotcha.
We don't have to worry about that then.
And then Saturday, Michigan tried their very, very best.
Did they though?
No.
Did they really?
I didn't watch one snap of that game. I knew it. I knew what was going on.
You didn't miss anything. It's a weird situation coming into what next weekend's matchup is, and
oh, that's right.
Michigan doesn't have a quarterback.
Nope.
State barely has a quarterback.
But in a land of the blind, a one-eyed man is king.
Indeed. Somehow, Aiden Giles has managed to secure this, despite the fact that, still throwing picks. Only threw one touchdown on the day. But they managed to pull it off against Iowa, for whatever that might be worth. Meanwhile, Michigan falling to Illinois?
Illinois. Yep, that happened. That really happened. And it wasn't like they squeaked out a win. It was a beating.
Yeah, there was no squeaking out a win there. That was kind of a blowout from pretty early on.
Yep. Yeah, that was bad. But then the weekend was at least for Michigan fans was saved a little with the Detroit Lions.
And we will get to the Lions in fairly short order.
What a game.
But I got to ask, with Michigan,
sure,
who's going to be starting against State? It can't be Jack Tuttle. He lost a fumble. He threw a pick. Only completed like two-thirds of his... Well, he went 20 for 32 for 208 yards. He holds onto the ball too long. He turns the ball over a ton. He takes more sacks than, anybody in college football, it seems
like. Takes more sacks than the local Walmart.
And there's not a good option. Like... It's not Alex Orji. It's not Davis Warren. I heard someone, posit today that they should just try and, do a two-quarterback system, just rotate them out, like, in the game. Like, that seems even worse.
Yeah, at this point, throw anything against the wall and see if anything sticks.
And I'm sorry, I subscribe to the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. In this case, they have three quarterbacks and still don't have a quarterback. You're 129th in the nation in passing offense, if you can believe that.
Yikes.
Between Warren, Orji, and Tuttle, you have a combined 6 passing touchdowns and 9 interceptions.
I'm seeing a name I don't even recognize, Anthony Arno.
Your guess is as good as mine.
He's a senior this year.
Well, he's still probably not going to see any playing time. Unless you do something insane and you put the freshman Jaden Davis in there, I don't know what options you have at this point. Like, you're basically just kind of really washing your hands of this season. Like, a State loss is basically going to guarantee that you don't make it to a bowl game.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're not beating Oregon. You're not beating Ohio State.
Nope.
And there was another matchup in there. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head that also does not necessarily favor you.
Aside from what you just mentioned, there's Indiana and Northwestern.
Yeah, you're not beating Indiana. Indiana's off to a 7-0 start right now.
13th in the top 25 right now.
I don't think you can beat Indiana at this point.
Nope.
So that would give you 6 losses right there. If you lose to State, that's 7, and that season over.
Yep. So, you got... I don't know what they're going to do. I don't even think the coach knows what to do.
Well, Sherrone Moore is just kind of at a loss here at this point. Has to be. I mean, and it seems like in any given week, that team just doesn't look ready to play at all. And if that's not on Sherrone Moore and company, I don't know what is. The QB situation is terrible, and there's really just... And there's really no getting around that. But... It just doesn't seem like they're ready to play in any given week. And that's a huge issue. Oh, great. Michigan State's a night game. Lovely.
Of course it is.
For every game, seems like State plays the season's night game. Which I'm sorry.
You're a purist.
I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to the college football thing. I don't need conferences with 20 teams in them and every Big Ten game being a nighttime matchup. Sometimes you just like a good old-fashioned 3:30 start, okay?
I like noon.
I mean, I could deal with big noon kickoff, too, but...
Get a pot roast going, get the game going on around 12:30, whenever, and, that's good. That's a good time right there.
I think of a lot worse things, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what you get to look forward to going into this week, a game that admittedly Michigan should still win, but when it comes to this matchup, that's there's never a guarantee because everyone shows up no matter how bad the quarterback situation is. We have a lot of stuff to get into today. We will spend plenty of time talking about the Lions. I have all the audio you could possibly ever want and then some, and we'll kind of dive into the situation that remains with replacing one Aiden Hutchinson, and then probably have some time for NFL overreactions at some point after that. It is happy hour. Stick around. We'll be back right after this. So in a game that pretty much everybody was kind of at least a little bit, whether they want to admit it or not, a bit nervous about going in, the Lions taking on the Vikings this Sunday. I know I had a bit of concern. How is this team going to respond to Aiden Hutchinson being out basically for the season? Are they going to be able to put together anything resembling a competent defense? And, well, as it turns out, they were able to do a lot more than I expected. But let's take this thing at least somewhat in order here, shall we? And I've got audio for days on some of this. This is probably the move that people question the most that Dan Campbell attempted, a fake punt on the very first drive of the game.
They snap it. They're going to fake it. And they're not going to get it. That is going to be Jalen Reeves-Maven taken down right at the line of scrimmage. They snapped it short. Looked like they were trying to set up an option on the play that time. Minnesota did not bite. Jalen Reeves-Maven taken down. He had Sione Vaki running on the outside and probably could have pitched it to him, but he kept it himself and got taken down.
That was definitely a choice. I will say that. But, I mean, this, and also the fact that they were so deep in their own zone has a lot of people, I think, looking like, what are you doing here? But this is the kind of aggressiveness that that Dan Campbell thrives on. I find it rather hard to criticize given that necessarily.
They were able to score on that drive, or at least just get the first down, everybody would have been talking about how fantastic Campbell was.
No, they absolutely would have been. It's what makes it hard for me to sit here and really go after something like this. So from there, Minnesota comes and makes it a 10-0 game, a 34-yard touchdown run and a 57-yard field goal. Lions have not made it onto the board yet. Jahmyr Gibbs was not going to let that be the case for very long.
Goff gives it to Gibbs, right side, try to get the edge, cuts it to the 40, 35.
Oh, go, baby!
There he goes, count it down, 10-5, end zone, touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby! That's the man they call Sonic. Just dancing his way to the end zone, shaking the Vikings along the way.
Man.
That is just gorgeous stuff by Jahmyr Gibbs. Exactly what this football team needed.
Goff and takes back. Let me tell you, Jahmyr Gibbs would not be left off the scoreboard entirely the rest of the way. In fact, he had him a game. We'll get to that in a minute. Lions weren't done here in the second quarter yet. Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Goff takes back, looking, step right, throws wide open, downfield. He's caught, end zone, touchdown, Detroit Lions. That is terrific protection up front. That gave Goff time. He found Amon-Ra streaking up the field. He dropped it in the basket, 14 to the house, and the Lions have got the lead.
Amon-Ra didn't miss, by the way, a single target on the day. He caught them all for a season high 112 yards and a touchdown. And he wasn't the only one to get involved in the wide receiving game today, but we'll get to that in a minute. The defense certainly showed up as well. Brian Branch.
Darnold ducks in behind center, takes the snap, turns, wants to throw deep in the pocket. Now he throws it in.
Oh,
picked up! Brian Branch intercepted it, intended for Addison down at the 28-yard line. Branch said, not on my watch. Went up and made the grab.
Man.
What a player Brian Branch is turning out to be.
And they're not wrong. He has been absolutely fantastic. Like, he's easily the best thing this Lions secondary has going for it. He's had at least two pass breakups in every game he's played this year, including yesterday. That pick was just absolutely a thing of beauty, man. And then the other one ended up stalling out a drive for the Vikings when Detroit was still trailing in this game. Then Jahmyr Gibbs again.
Draw. Long look at that defense. Now he takes the snap, hands it to Gibbs, straight up the gut, to the house, touchdown Detroit Lions. That offensive line just split that Viking defense, and 26 ran it right up the gut.
Like I said,
not
Gibbs,
too shabby.
Gibbs had him a day. Like, this may have been his best performance since he's been here. Like, he rushed for 71 yards on just 14 carries, even without that 45-yard touchdown. And against a run defense that's as good as this one is, on a day that also where the O-line wasn't really doing particularly well. Problem was, for David Montgomery, it wasn't quite so good of a day. As you may remember, he didn't end up having a very productive day as it was, but there was also the, if I can even find it, the fumble.
Goff takes the snap, turns, gives it to Montgomery. Montgomery over the left side. Oh, lost the football, and it's picked up by Minnesota with a flag down. Running up the right sideline is Pace to the end zone for the go-ahead score.
It's a flag. It's a flag on the field.
There is a flag down as it stands now. It's a fumble recovered by Minnesota, and Pace took it to the house.
And luckily for you here, they went for the two-point conversion on the very next play and failed.
Arnold's going to work out of the gun. He's got Aaron Jones to his right. Vikings go for two. Arnold takes the snap, back and looking to throw. Does. End zone incomplete. Intended for Addison, Brian Branch in coverage. It's a one-point game.
Which ended up allowing you to be able to win this thing in regulation, ultimately. Not to be left out of the scoring, though. While Amon-Ra St. Brown had him a day, Khalif Raymond getting on the board as well.
Goff on third down. Takes the shotgun snap. Back, looking. Goff throwing. Caught. Inside the 15. Inside the 10. To the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Khalif Raymond. What an answer by Detroit.
Honestly, everything on your offense was functioning about as well as it could have. Jared Goff has probably had the best, like, over these last four games, is about as good as he has looked as a Detroit Lion or possibly in his NFL career. Over the last four games, 76 of 91 for 1,086 yards.
Wow.
Almost 12 yards per attempt. 9 touchdowns, 1 pick. Passer rating of 144.8.
Wow.
He is once again nearly perfect. Like, and he just keeps reeling these things off like nobody's business. Like, he was placing the ball right where, absolutely where he needed to. He's really good at recognizing the pocket and being able to make good reads downfield. And all that despite the fact that your O-line was not good on Sunday. The guy who replaced Kevin Zeitler, Coyote Osika, he did not do particularly, it was not his best game. Like, after he had his best game as an NFL player, it was not good. Like, he got called for 2 holding penalties very early on. He played a little bit better, but my, what a rough start that was. And everyone not named Ragnow got called for at least 1 penalty. In total, the O-line got called for 7 penalties, which did not help things on the day. Glasgow, not his best performance. This might be Taylor Decker's worst game of the season. It was a bit rough, but the fact that Jared Goff still manages to get it done, that Jahmyr Gibbs still had him a game, that Amon-Ra St. Brown was perfect on the day, and even had Tim Patrick getting in on the mix too, having a couple catches for 25 yards in total. You love to see it. Like, it was absolutely because of, like, your receiving core, and Jared Goff did everything you could have possibly asked them to do. And ultimately, the results were everything you could have hoped for, despite some of the more questionable things. And, well, we'll talk about those more questionable things, notably the defense on the other side of the break. Can we play the game-winning call real quick? I just really want to do this. You get down to the end of this game, you're down 2 points, thankfully, because Minnesota botched the attempted 2-point conversion. So you're in position for Jake Bates. 9 for 9. And field goals coming into this game. Or coming into this kick, actually. And this happens.
So here we go. Hatton to snap. Fox to hold. Jake Bates with a 44-yard attempt, hash mark right side to give the Lions the lead. He's ready. There's the snap. There's the spot. Kick away. It is up, and it is good! Jake Bates sends it through! With 15 seconds to go, the Lions have taken the lead. It is Detroit 31 and the Vikings 29.
And, oh, go ahead.
Oh, that wasn't the finish, though.
That wasn't
Remember,
the finish.
There was they had to tack on an extra minute at the very end.
Oh, yeah, I've got that for you, too.
Oh, please go ahead and play it. I got something to say after that, but go ahead.
All right. So, yeah, you're set up. You've given Minnesota apparently an extra shot at a Hail Mary since they were not in field goal range. And this happened.
So here we go. One play separates the Lions from first place after all that. Darnold's going to work out of the gun. Final play of the game, barring a penalty. Darnold takes the snap. Back, looking. Rush comes. Darnold hit. Darnold down. This game is over. Trevor Nowoski with the sack. Your Detroit Lions are in first place.
And in tribute to Hutchinson, the game ends with a sack, cut, print. We have a movie.
You can't ask for much better than that.
No.
We are about up against the break, though. Stick around. Catherine Conley has your local headlines next after ABC News covers the world at 6 o'clock on WMIC AM and W237 EQ FM Sandusky. So picking up where we left off with your Detroit Football Lions, there's one thing that we all kind of were concerned about going into Sunday's game is how is this team going to respond to not having Aiden Hutchinson? Really, what are they going to do to fill that role? Because that, no doubt about it, huge loss for this team.
Yes.
Not having, I mean, you're already down one of your big edge rushers. Losing the big one was going to be a hard thing to overcome. And somehow the Lions did.
Yes, they did.
But that said, while the Lions did finish with 4 sacks and 5 QB hits on the day, only one of the sacks came from the D-line. Only 2 of the QB hits came from the D-line. Now, Josh Pascal was responsible for one of each, and give the man props as he absolutely did come in, absolutely ready to try and step up as much as he could, and he ended up being probably the most, really the most dominant guy on that D-line, despite the fact that he was in and out with injury too, which, well, that's great. That's just what you need.
Great.
DJ Reader had the other QB hit on the D-line. Now, there was just not a whole lot that was being gotten from this team's edge rushers. That just was, they weren't getting a whole lot of anything. Even the one sack that Pascal did get, we got kind of lucked into a little bit. I mean, they were not winning a whole lot of one-on-one matchups here. And then as far as the run game goes, Aaron Jones racked up 93 yards and was averaging 6.6 yards a carry, which is not great. That may be something. I still don't come away from this game feeling like, oh, we're going to be just fine without Hodge. If anything, to me, this emphasized that they absolutely positively need to go and get somebody post-haste. I at least, for my peace of mind here, before the trade deadline in 2 weeks, I need to at least hear that the Lions reached out to the Raiders about a Max Crosby trade. I need to at least hear that. If you don't get him, I can live with it, I guess, as long as you go out and get somebody else. I could deal with a lot of things here. I can deal with you went and you tried and you struck out. What I cannot abide by is not making the attempt.
Yeah.
I need you to show me your work here. I really do.
I kind of wish that would be in professional sports. You actually see some sort of transaction wire that they've actually talked to them. I mean, you hear sometimes so-and-so talk to this team talk to so-and-so, but then a lot of it's hearsay.
Yeah, but you'll hear a lot of these things. Like, I just need a report somewhere from Shefty or Rappaport that contact was made, and usually if the Lions are reaching out to teams about it, we're going to hear about it. If it doesn't happen, we'll still hear about it. traditionally.
I've been seeing a lot of talk about it. Probably a lot of the Lions faithful like us who are just kind of hoping it happens, hoping they're able to land Max Crosby, but I don't know.
I'm sure that's a lot of it, but all I'm asking is I want to at least see some indication that you tried. That's it. Like, tell me you at least went and called Vegas on Crosby. Tell me you at least called Cleveland on Myles Garrett. These are the only things I really need from, like, if you end up having to settle for a Hassan Reddick or a Trey Hendrickson or whoever, you know, I could be fine with it. I will understand it. You at least swung for the fences. You struck out. But it's the attempt that will at least, it's better than sitting there and taking one down the middle.
You miss 100% of the chances you don't take, shots you don't take.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
But that's ultimately, for me, the thing that I need more than anything to see here, that you absolutely still need an edge rusher, need somebody, because, like, blitzing this much is going to be unsustainable. Like, they blitz, I think, like 60% of the time on Sunday. And kudos to Aaron Glenn, don't get me wrong. I give that man all the credit in the world for being able to work the way he has. Like, Aaron Glenn had to be aggressive with the blitzes. They unfortunately, they weren't getting home a lot, and it didn't ultimately help your secondary very much. I mean, other than Brian Branch, who has just been an absolute stud in that unit this year, you didn't have a single pass breakup from anybody else on the Lions' defense. And you gave up a lot of big plays. You gave up a 50-yard bomb to Jordan Addison, a 25-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson, the Jalen Naylor pass for like 33 yards. And Terrion Arnold wasn't able to contain Aaron Jones on what ultimately ended up being a touchdown run for him. Like, Terrion Arnold still kind of looks like a rookie at times, man, which I get. Like, corner, it's a hard position to adjust to, but
yep.
And there's going to be growing pains, but you don't like to see that, because the problem is when you get super aggressive with the blitzing is that you leave yourself open to getting burned in coverage like that. And that ultimately leads to, well, giving up some big chunk plays that you'd really rather not. And when you ultimately didn't get home nearly as much as you would have liked to see from all that, not putting as many pressures, getting as many sacks as you would like to see. And that all directly leads back to not having a competent edge rusher. Like, I don't blame Josh Pascal here. He did everything you could have possibly asked him to do, given the situation that this team found itself in. But that's not sustainable over the course of the rest of the season. You're going to go in, you're going to beat up on the Titans next week because they're the Titans. They're awful. They're like the laughing stock of the National Football League right now. You're going to go in there, you're going to beat them, you're going to beat them soundly. You got Green Bay after that.
Yikes.
And I don't know if that's what it's going to take, you know, losing to them to wake everybody up here. And maybe, you know, it's entirely possible that they are making these moves already and we haven't heard about them yet. But I need to hear about them at some point after the trade deadline has come and gone and we've come back disappointed, because you can beat Tennessee as you are right now. I don't necessarily know that you can beat Green Bay playing this way. I mean, your offense is more than good enough to go out and hang with anybody, but I have no faith in your D-line to put enough pressure on an opposing quarterback without a real edge rusher or two, even. But there has to be a move made here in the not-too-distant future, in my mind. If you don't do that, then you're certainly not getting back to the NFC title game, much less the Super Bowl. I don't see how you do. Like, obviously the level of competition is very that much higher as it is, getting it once you get into the playoffs anyway. But I mean, the Lions, the regular season schedule just gets harder the better that you are. That's a fact. That's how it goes. Not only are teams taking you more seriously when you might have been, you catch them by surprise before, but the schedule does get harder for the teams that are, moving better. The NFL kind of just does it that way. You got to face the Niners in San Fran. You're going to have to face Buffalo. You're going to have to go up. Well, you have to go up against the Texans in Houston.
Ouch.
Now, granted, you also get to play the Titans, Colts, and Jags, which helps a little bit. But
So they're going to London?
No, Jacksonville's coming here.
Ah, gotcha.
But the schedule does not get any easier from here, necessarily. I mean, it does for the stretch that you get to play a bunch of AFC South garbage, but winning those interdivisional matchups is going to be critical because this division is so damn good. Like, you're in front in the NFC North right now. You hold the tiebreaker for the moment over the Vikings, but there are 3 5-win teams right now in this division. And Chicago is not that far behind. So realistically, this is a 3, maybe even 4-way dogfight for this division. You can't afford to lose any ground if you can at all avoid it. And I feel like you're playing with fire here, not going and shoring this up. Am I wrong?
No. Make it happen. Come on, guys.
Just give me some hope. Give me something here, Brad Holmes. Let me feel like we're not seriously going forward with that. Yeah, we're just gonna hit next man up. Like I get that you have to say that in public,
yeah,
because you can't look desperate. I understand that. I truly do. I get that. That's you can't just go out there and be like, yeah, we need to go and do something about this immediately because we don't have any faith in our guys. Because if there's one thing that Dan Campbell has been extraordinarily good at since he's been here, it is that giving his guys the idea that, yeah, I absolutely believe in you guys. Like, I have all my best faith in the guys that are here on the field. And you saw that even with the handing of Lee McNeil an extension the day after Hutch got hurt, before they went and acquired whoever off the practice squad. Like, yeah. They've tried very hard to instill this in their guys. And you see it even in the things that we sometimes scratch our heads at. Like, why are we going and attempting a fake punt on the first drive of the game? Or do we just hate our kicker that much? We're going for it again here, really? But there's a method to the madness. And I get that. I do completely get that. That you have to put up that front. But you also have to be a little bit realistic. Like, I got to hear Brad Holmes is scouring the phones. And I did. There has been a couple things. The Lions did reach out to the Jets about Hassan Reddick, for what it's worth. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reporting that Reddick's recent hiring of Drew Rosenhaus could improve his chances of either staying with the Jets or facilitating a trade. And not, obviously, the target that I wanted, ultimately. But I mean, you'll take what you can get, right? He still hasn't played. He's still with them for the time being. But if you land him, it's not the worst consolation prize ever. There's also, apparently, Za'Darius Smith told a reporter for the Browns this week that he'd like a trade to Detroit. Quote, "If I was to go to Detroit, I would like it because I get to play Green Bay twice a year and the Vikings twice a year. So yeah, that'll be big." I did not expect to see that. Like, that was quite the big statement coming out there from him. For what it's worth, Za'Darius Smith spent 3 seasons in Green Bay and 1 in Minnesota before he ended up in Cleveland. And he sounds like a guy who wants to really go back and stick it to his former teams. But I mean, he's 32 years old. He's certainly lost a step. There's no doubt about that. But he did, you know, a couple years ago produce 10 sacks for the Vikings, and he was a Pro Bowler that year. He very much fits the scheme. He fits the style of player that they like. If I find out, yeah, we called on Max Crosby. They told us to kick rocks. We offered him like 2 first-rounders, and no, they weren't having it. They called Cleveland on Myles Garrett, and the price is too high, and they're like, yeah, okay, fine, we'll take a Za'Darius Smith instead. I'll be okay with it. What I just can't have happen is we don't try it all, and we stick with what's going down, because teams are going to adjust really quick to the way you're playing. Like, teams are going to see that blitz coming. They're going to know that they can just throw a deep threat because you've got your secondary out on an island, basically. They're going to know that that's very much the option that the Lions have subscribed to because it's the only one they really have with the current personnel they have. So as long as something gets done and you took the swings on the big names, I can be okay with it. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. So we've talked plenty, certainly today, about the Lions and, well, the struggles they still kind of face. But there are other things that happened around the NFL this week that don't have anything to do with the Lions and maybe one or two that still do. Either way, as always, as we do here on Mondays, it's our job to take a look at all the overreactions and tell you what's real and what's just kind of BS. Hit Maestro the music, please.
All right, overreaction or reality. We start with the Giants. Did they make a huge mistake letting Saquon Barkley leave to sign with the Eagles?
Look, I get how you could think that, given that Barkley was out for revenge Sunday against the G-Men, and he torched him, but good. Like, he had about 200 rushing yards on the day. But here's the thing. They're not in a position to contend for anything with or without Saquon Barkley. This is a team that is full-on into a rebuild, and maybe at least one or two of the people in charge are aware of that fact. Overpaying Saquon Barkley was not going to make that team a contender any more than letting him go just doomed the franchise forever. That's dumb. Sorry. Like, you're just not a good team. You weren't going to be a good team. You don't have a quarterback. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not buying that Saquon was the difference between the Giants being a player in the NFC East this year and occupying the cellar like they currently do.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a fan of the Giants, by the way, my condolences. I mean, you have to be frustrated that a really good player like Saquon Barkley was just left to walk. They don't understand the whole long term, or maybe they do understand the whole long term idea of it, but they want that excitement. They want to know that they bought that jersey and it's still relevant.
Exactly. And the Eagles aren't that far removed from a Super Bowl appearance. Like, of course, they were willing to shell out ridiculous money to upgrade things. Also, Barkley's like, so this is what it's like to actually run behind a halfway decent offensive line.
This is fantastic.
Why haven't I been doing this for years? What was I thinking?
The Amari Cooper trade will have a greater impact than the Davante Adams trade. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
That's a fact. That is absolutely a fact. Davante Adams going to the Jets honestly doesn't change much with the Jets. It's not like they didn't have, you know, a few offensive weapons in New York. Like, he already had you had a Garrett Wilson there who was, you know, I mean, you can argue not maybe as good as Devontae, if not, you know, certainly close. Like, he had weapons there. Your problems are your defense is trash, and your O-line doesn't know how to protect your passer at all. Like, these are your problems. Adding Davante Adams didn't solve any of the major glaring problems with the Jets. Neither did firing Robert Saleh, quite frankly, but that's a whole nother thing for another day. Meanwhile, adding Amari Cooper to a Bills team that is absolutely going to win the AFC East this year by a long shot and be a real Super Bowl contending team, that does have a major impact. Especially when you look at what they had going in. Khalil Shakir, like, he's good, but he's not Amari Cooper good. Keon Coleman might be a wideout one eventually, but he's not yet. But he's still got a lot yet to do to get to that point. The Amari Cooper immediately boosts the wide receiver room there immensely, and on a team with real playoff aspirations, I think that has much more of an impact than Aaron Rodgers reuniting with one of his Packer buddies.
We move on to the Saints. All right, here we go. Saints Dennis Allen is going to be the next head coach to lose his job.
You know, before Doug Peterson and the Jags went and won Sunday in London over the Patriots, I probably would have told you this absolutely is an overreaction.
But
but they did, so yeah. I feel like it becomes a lot more of a possibility now. But the Saints, they're injury depleted. You're down Derek Carr. You're down Chris Olave. You're down Rashid Shaheed. The defense is just bad, and there's not really getting around that. But Kerr's going to be back. Olave and Shahid are going to be back. Like, you're going to get you're going to look better. And also, you go up against the Chargers and Panther defenses next. And neither of those are particularly good offenses anyway. So you have the opportunity to right the ship real quick. I'm still saying it's an overreaction at the moment. And I think that the Saints and, I think Benson are going to give him every opportunity to prove that he can keep the job. I fully 100% believe that that's the case. But if things don't go well against the Chargers and against the Panthers, maybe we're talking a different tune. Right now, for me, it's still Doug Peterson because, okay, great, you beat the Patriots. The Patriots are terrible.
Yeah.
The Patriots may be the only team in the league worse than the Jags right now.
Oh, the fans in London had to love that.
Right? It's like, we're really giving you our best, London. Like,
no, here, the Patriots, they're named after, like, the colonials, who rebelled against, Britain in the Revolutionary War. And they're like, oh, finally! It only took
225 years. I was more coming from the standpoint of, we're trying to show you guys that football is awesome and you should be all about it.
Yeah.
And what are we doing? We're giving you our two worst football teams. just roll out a big old middle finger to the entire country of England.
All right,
I love it.
Let's move over to the NFC North.
Okay.
Here we go.
No boy.
The Packers might finally have the defense they needed to support their offense. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
You know what? I have to say at this point, I don't at all think that that's an overreaction. Like, this team really, this absolutely is the truth, I think. I mean, you hired a new D coordinator this offseason in Jeff Hafley, former Boston College coach. And for whatever reason, the defense has never been particularly good under Matt LaFleur. It's always been kind of an issue. You've now got 17 takeaways in the first 6 weeks of the season. You held C.J. Stroud to 86 passing yards, which is saying a lot considering Stroud's been playing out of his mind over the last his year and a half in this league. I mean, Joe Mixon did still get 115 yards and two touchdowns on the day, but you basically managed to put a halt to everything else. Yeah, if anything, that might be an underreaction.
And finally, I actually have some more in my pocket, but I do want to have a overreaction, possibly, for your Detroit Lions.
Lay it on me.
The Lions are the best team in the NFC, even without Aiden Hutchinson.
It's hard to argue against, admittedly, for the sheer fact that your offense has been unstoppable. Like, Jared Goff is playing some of the best football of his career. Doesn't matter what wide receiver it is on any given week, they seem to kind of have a way of getting it done. Whether it's J-Mo or Amon-Ra or apparently Khalif Raymond for some reason. Or, we're just going to target Tim Patrick for a couple big games. Why not? Like, they get it done. David Montgomery probably had the worst game of his Lions tenure yesterday, but Jahmyr Gibbs stepped up and really kind of more than made up for that. I do worry, though. I worry so much with the defense on this thing. But I guess the upside is that the Eagles and the Niners are struggling in a lot of ways, too. Like, they've been going through more than their fair share of issues early on this season, and that's the only thing that really kind of has me thinking, you know what, maybe this isn't an overreaction. Maybe the offense is good enough to overcome what the defense is kind of lacking at the moment, and lacking for now until Hutch gets back, really.
Are we seeing a moment where Minnesota and Detroit are kind of a 1A, 1B in the NFC North? The Lions have got that top spot, which the view from here is fantastic. I can't remember a time that we've seen this view, but I mean, they kind of have to be on their game, right? Because Minnesota, they're not going away.
They're not.
We saw that game.
They're not. The problem is, I don't think the Packers are either.
Oh, that's going to be a king of the mountain.
It really truly is, because like The Packers have improved on what's been their biggest shortcoming, as we talked about earlier in the segment. So I do kind of worry, like, you have to be on the top of your game to be able to get it done here. Like, honestly, you're looking better than either the Eagles or the Niners are at this point in the season.
So here's another, I guess, a supplemental overreaction.
Okay.
The NFC North is the division to beat.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, absolutely. Like, you're sending at least three teams to the playoffs this season. I'm booking that right now. Does anybody really scare you in the NFC South at this point in time? Tampa is probably going to pull away from that eventually. Right now, Seattle's looking like they have the potential to run away with the NFC West. The Niners will make the playoffs. I don't expect that team to be below by 500 for very long. And the NFC East, Washington has been a surprising story, I have to say.
Yeah, wow.
Jaden Daniels has really got that team contending at a level that I wasn't sure that they
I'm trying to think of who they played on Sunday that they took behind the woodshed. But it was like, what was it, 40-7? Something like that? Good for them.
It was indeed. Like that. it was the Panthers.
Still.
The Panthers are still hot garbage, certainly. I mean, they hung in there against Baltimore. They've beaten Arizona, Cleveland, Cincy, and the G-Men. You lost to the Bucs in week one, but, you know, that's... Yeah, no one's going to hold that against you, I wouldn't say. But and here they are just coming out of nowhere and getting it done. Like, this is the NFC North is by far the best division in, I would argue, the best division in football. Nah, let's keep this thing rolling.
All right. you're going to love this one. Deshaun Watson played his last game with the Browns. Is that an overreaction or is this reality?
That is, one can only hope that's the case. Because I'm ready for that experiment to be over. I'm done with it. I'm over that whole
Achilles
thing.
Achilles tear. Come on now.
What I will say about that is if the Cleveland Browns were a team that was run by someone with a brain in their head, it would be, yes, it would be Deshaun Watson's last game probably as an NFL quarterback. But because that team is run by people who are absolute, or owned by people who are absolutely brain dead, he's probably going to get another chance whenever he comes back. He shouldn't, but he probably will because, well, we spent all that money.
Look at that contract.
At that point, though, like, at what point is it worth it just to cut your losses on that and put literally anybody else there?
Right. A guaranteed $92 million over 2 years. Wow. They were not thinking.
No, they weren't. They haven't been thinking at all. Like, that was not one of their smartest moves.
We always love seeing these questions. Josh Allen is the best QB in the NFL this season. Reality or overreaction?
You know, you can make an argument for Jared Goff. And I might I might make an argument for Jared Goff, but Allen has not had, he's had a great season and he's done it with basically nobody to throw to. He doesn't have a Stephon Diggs. Amari Cooper just got there. He's been trying to make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken bleep. No offense to Keon Coleman and whoever the other Khalil, what's his face, but yeah. You know what? That you're making a lot of, you know, just okay receivers look really good. I can't take that away from this man. He's thrown 12 touchdowns to this point in the season. He hasn't thrown a pick yet. And he's throwing his main targets are Khalil Shakir and Keon Coleman. Like, I have to give props to that man. Like, he is the best QB in the league right now, and there's very few people that could make much of an argument. You could see him seriously end up being... He should be in MVP talks right now. I would also argue that a certain Detroit quarterback is entering those talks, is entering that chat at least.
We have become Bob Swirsky's super fan when it comes to Lions. A certain quarterback by the name of Jared Goff.
But I'm not wrong, though.
No, you're not wrong.
You're looking at this last four games and tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're hitting the nail on the head. I'm actually... I'm going to say it's an overreaction completely if I was to chime in, because, I mean, Josh Allen, great quarterback, and you're right, he doesn't have a whole lot of weapons, but I mean...
He doesn't have weapons, that's the thing.
Jared Goff, I mean, he's making good... I'm going to say it. He's making Amon St. Brown look good. He's making a lot of those guys...
He needs to make St. Brown look good. Amon St. Brown is good,
but I'm just saying...
Geno is good. Like... And this is
a very special stew. You don't want to mess with too many of the ingredients.
It really truly is. Just the way he's reading guys downfield and, you know, and really just placing the ball and just in putting his guys in position to make throws or make catches. Like, what more can you really ask for? But I mean, it's hard to argue with 10 touchdowns and 4 picks versus 12 touchdowns and no picks.
Right.
To a cast of nobody.
Basically. A cast of nobody.
To guys who would basically, who would be like third, fourth stringers on this team.
Yeah, it's like the old Gilligan's Island theme song and the rest. All right, so I know where you're going to go with this, but I'm still going there. Chiefs won't win Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes turnovers. Is that an overreaction or is that a reality?
The Chiefs might be the worst 6-0 team ever. I know a lot of people are going to argue that they're getting a lot of help from, you know, outside sources on this, but
yeah.
The Chiefs might seriously be the worst 6-0 team ever. How is Pat Mahomes going out there, like, throwing a hair over, like, 230 yards a game on average? He's got more picks than he has touchdowns. He's got the most interceptions he's thrown to this point in the season ever, and the least passing touchdowns. But yet, somehow, that team is still undefeated.
Yeah.
Can they still win it? Absolutely. I mean, Rashee Rice is out for the season. Travis Kelce does not look like Travis Kelce anymore.
Whoa, easy now. The Swifties are listening.
I don't care. Bring on the Swifties.
Shake it off.
Not worried about it. But your left tackle position is also not exactly a position of strength by any means. But the Chiefs' defense has been absolutely stellar. I don't think they're going to win a Super Bowl this way, though. Like, despite the fact that Mahomes is turning the ball over, if he keeps playing like this, no, they're not winning a Super Bowl.
No, they're not going to win a Super Bowl, because that Super Bowl is going to a certain team with a Honolulu blue and silver on their helmets.
All right then.
Jordan Love is better than C.J. Stroud. And discuss. reality or overreaction?
I hate to say it. I think you might be right. See, the thing is, so Love has he's only completing 61% of his passes. He's thrown 8 picks. He's been aggressive, which has worked out very well for the Packers. Stroud had a terrible game, though. Like, he didn't complete half of his passes, didn't crack 90 yards passing on Sunday. And if it wasn't for the fact that Love was just throwing picks like crazy, the Texans wouldn't have been in this thing. I mean, right now, I mean, Stroud's young yet. He very much has time to prove us all wrong on this, but until further notice, no, that's the reality of it. And I hate to say it as a, you know, Packers hater, but I have no choice.
Yeah, we talked about it. It's going to be King of the Mountain in the NFC North. All right, moving on. Is this an overreaction or is this a reality? Daniel Jones should be benched for Drew Lock next week.
Should he be benched? Should he ever start an NFL game again? Probably not. Drew Lock isn't good, though. He's not any better. I don't think it's going to change anything or help anything. Like, he had a terrible game. Like, he got pulled in the fourth quarter on Sunday. He's completed, again, another rather low percentage of completed passes, 62.5%. 6 touchdowns to 4 picks. Not great. And especially at home, this offense is trash. He hasn't, since he signed that big old $160 million contract, he hasn't thrown a passing touchdown at home.
I have said it many times. Maybe more than NHL as opposed to anybody else. But if you give a player a huge contract, it takes some of the fight out of them.
I don't know if it necessarily took the fight out of him. I also was never convinced that he was good from the beginning. So they're probably going to stay with him because, like I said, Drew Lock, I don't think is a better option for you. But I also fully expect at some point they're going to bench him. It's going to happen.
Yep.
It may not be next week, but he's going to get benched before this season's done. What else you got for me?
You know what? This actually gets right into our wheelhouse. I'm going
to
read it.
Do you want me? We can take a break and come back and do it if you'd like.
Do we need a break? Because we can do it.
We probably should.
Okay.
All right. We'll come back and do it next on Happy Hour. So we're not done with overreactions just yet. We have a little unfinished business to take care of.
No, we're kind of taking our victory lap as far as Lions fans go. And we don't usually get this very often, so let us have this.
Just let us have this, shall we? All right.
Yeah.
Give me some football music.
Football music.
There we go.
Oh, I hear Terry Bradshaw talking right now.
And not having a clue where he is, what he's talking about.
Great. Sunny time in California. We're in Minnesota, Terry. Oh, yeah, I love Minnesota. All right. So we touched on this earlier, but I love this. I want to read this again. The NFC North will get 3 playoff teams.
It's happening. I'm telling you, it's happening. There's no way it's like.
Then who's out?
Who's out? Well,
who's out?
Let's see. With the other conferences, or with the other divisions in this conference, rather, I think Seattle's making it in for sure.
Sure.
Tampa's not, or the NFC South's not getting 2 teams in.
No.
They'll be lucky to get 1. No. They have to get one.
Yeah. Goodell's like, hey.
It's got to be at this point between the runner-up in the NFC East and the runner-up in the NFC West. Can the Niners get their you-know-what together enough to either take the division or edge past Seattle? I don't know. I still think it's a possibility either Washington or Philly could be the odd team out even.
Whoa, Philly out? Ooh, that's a hot take.
I think the West is getting 2 teams in. I think they're absolutely going to. Like,
I'm hoping it happens because, I mean, yeah, you know, you and I with Philly sports fans, I want them to have misery. Absolutely.
Although, but there's a good chance. Like, it really could. I have to look at the schedules to really be able to answer fully who between. Because I think Washington's getting in at this point. Like, they played too well for me to sit here and say that they can't do it.
Yeah, didn't they get the memo that they were supposed to absolutely be trash?
Right. So Philly's got to take on the Bengals in Cincy. Jacksonville, obviously, 2 games against Washington. Dallas, the Rams, the Ravens. Like, it's not exactly an easy path for them going forward. Looking at the Niners, they got to play, they have to play the Bucs, the Seahawks, the Cowboys, the Bills, the Dolphins, the Cards, and the Rams yet. Honestly, you could see one of either Seattle or San Fran be the last team out. If I got to predict it right now, if the Niners don't get it together, they might be looking on the outside looking in. Seattle's lineup is a little bit tricky as well, but they also get to go play the Jets. So that all kind of offsets, really. It's going to be a toss-up for me between San Fran and Seattle, I think, for which team misses out. But yeah, I think you're sending 3 teams to the playoffs. I think you absolutely are. There are 3 teams in here, arguably 4, that are good enough to contend. I would say for sure the Lions and Vikings are getting in, and I would say the Packers are most likely your 3rd team in.
Okay, so here we go. Patriots are the worst team in the NFL. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
As much as I love to sit here and just give them all the business, the Carolina Panthers do still exist. The Carolina Panthers are an absolute dumpster fire of a franchise. Like, we saw that this week. They got shellacked. Like, I don't think for a second that the Patriots are bad right now. They're not Carolina bad. Nobody's Carolina bad. Like, the defense in New England has not been good. Drake May has been actually pretty nice. Like, they at least have potentially a franchise QB, which Carolina doesn't have. So, no. The Panthers don't have one of those. Andy Dalton's not your franchise QB at this point in his career. That I would say is absolutely an overreaction. As much fun as it is to pile on him, to watch him be terrible after being so good for so long, I can't get down with it. There's your overreactions for the week. I think we've covered all of our bases pretty well here. And we're just about up against it. Join us Friday for more Lions. Join us for the big old rivalry game this week. There'll be plenty trash talk.
Hopefully I do better on the picks than I did this Sunday.
We'll see about that. Anyway, full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3:00.